The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
Mike Missinelli. 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station.
We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missinelli Show.
Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like a sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly with Hades the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. Our competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kinda hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like an opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to rock ya.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back. Cruz with you again on the Mike Missinelli Show, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast. Thanks, Jason Martinez, filling in for us last week. And we broadcast live here from Arizona, where it's not the humidity, it's the heat. I have never, I don't think, lived over a three-week period where it's been 95 every day. It's absolutely ridiculous. Well, in this case, it is the heat plus the humidity, which makes it even worse. But listen, we carry on here, and we would have Monday of this week is an excellent day to be on for Sports Talk Radio because we have events to talk about. We've had a couple Sixers scrimmages over the weekend. We had the Phillies starting their season, but now this has been bulldozed by the notion on whether this baseball season can even continue. And I don't think I'm making a big leap here, because if I recall the NBA, as soon as they had players test positive, the commissioner came in and went, boom, shut it down. Now, I don't know if this is going to happen here, because the Phillies are going to be tested, and we're about to get the results of their tests today to see if they've been infected by the Marlins. And in case you haven't been following, what is it, 7 players and 2 coaches, or 8 players?
8 in the eight latest players. Batch, so now it's a total of 14.
Okay, so it's a total of 14 that tested positive. Now, there's so many questions that if you look forward, what can happen here? The Marlins, you know, this baseball thing, when people are getting sick, they figure they had enough players to fill in. But when you're talking about big numbers, you don't have a lot of players to fill in. And so if you have to quarantine the Marlins and they have to miss games and take forfeits or whatever, because it's practically impossible in a season this short to make up a bunch of games. 1 or 2? Yes. If you have a quarantine these guys now and they're getting tested, the quarantined people are staying in Philadelphia. The Marlins who test negative are flying back to Florida, the hotbed of where this is all going on. And in fact, there was enough information yesterday for the commissioner to step in and say, no mas today. We're going to cancel this game. Instead, they left it up to a vote of the players. Now, players are not going to not want to play. They're in town. They're in the clubhouse. They're going to go out and play. They don't see the immediacy of quarantine with the COVID virus going on around. But if you watch baseball this weekend, you saw a bunch of people breaking the protocol. You know, we were conditioned to think that these baseball players, okay, they were going to wear a mask in the dugout. They weren't even going to sit in the dugout altogether. They were supposed to be sitting in the stands. Well, you saw that one out the window. Home runs, it was flesh on flesh. Taking helmets off. They did the same thing that they had been doing without regard to the protocol. Now, Rhys Hoskins wore a mask when somebody got on first base. Okay, good. You got Marlins coming to the plate that may be infected. JT Realmuto's behind the plate. Guys running the bases. They're not wearing masks. Gregorius is the only guy wearing a mask. So they didn't take it seriously. And now we'll see what happens. But it would not shock me as this week goes on that the commissioner gets involved, just like Adam Silver got involved and said, we can't do it. Sorry. We tried it. So in the meantime, all we have to do is analyze what we saw baseball wise. And here's the thing. I'm going to say this because I like Joe Girardi. Everybody likes Joe Girardi. People said it was an upgrade to have Joe Girardi. Fine. He's a personable guy. You see him on these post-game interviews, you want to love the guy. But I want to tell you that had Gabe Kapler managed the bullpen the way Girardi did this weekend, he would be destroyed in this town today. All right? So let me just go over a couple circumstances. Do I think it's an upgrade? Yes. Would I rather have Joe Girardi and Gabe Kapler? Yes, I would. All right? So I criticize when the need be. So game one. Now, this is a 60-game season, mind you. Every game is precious. You don't have time to mess around. So let's go back before game one. Let's go to the general manager's office. Knowing it's a 60-game schedule, he's got about six untested bullpen guys. Six! Now, what's the thought pattern here? I don't know. He wanted to get some younger arms in there. You can't mess around here. So now Girardi, his first pitching change in a key spot, the game is still in question. In Friday's game, he brings in Ramon Rosso. All right. Ramon Rosso may have an arm. They may like him. Are you going to throw him into a game that's in question in his first major league appearance? I know there are no fans, but the kid was like messing himself out there. He was all over the place. Now, why would you choose to put him in that spot? And then we go to Sunday. Don't get me started about Velasquez because you know I hate him with a passion. But I've got to roll with it now because they keep forcing him down my damn throat. I named him four-inning Vinny. Yesterday, he was three-inning Vinny. And I go, okay. He gives up the home run after he staked with a four-run lead, right? But what do you have in your bullpen? The kid gets the side out in order in the third. They put Cole Irvin in the fourth. Joe, what are you doing to me? I hate Velasquez too, but at that point, he's coming off an inning where he gets one, two, three, and you need him to eat innings so you don't have to rely on these schmoes you're bringing in. Cole Irvin to Reggie McClain. Come on now. What are we doing, Joe? All right, I got it all out. Before I go to the Sixers, which is a pleasant part we're going to talk about, Tyrone, Gabe Kapler pulls that. He's getting hammered today.
You're absolutely right about that. And the Velasquez move did not make sense. It did not make sense. And I agree. We've all seen enough of Velasquez. But we needed more of him yesterday, even though we've all seen enough, because look at your alternatives. And I don't... look at your...
that's the point. Like, what makes him think, what have they ever seen in Cole Irvin that he's the first guy to keep the, you know, the score... Like, what is that about?
And honestly, right now, I could say this. As much as I don't like Velasquez, if you have me choose between Velasquez or Cole Irvin, I'll take Velasquez every day and, ironically, twice on Sunday. And they were playing on Sunday.
No, here's the thing. He may have blown up again.
Maybe.
It would not have shocked me in the fourth inning, Vinny Velasquez would have blown up. But you don't know that at that point. What you know is... he got a clean inning the inning before. So if you can nurse him to the through five, maybe even into the sixth, you shorten the time you got to use the schlemiels.
And they're all bad.
I don't understand what they're thinking. All right. Well, they didn't hit. All right. 0-for-4, bases loaded yesterday. All right. I get it. They didn't get a key hit.
But they did get six runs. That you should win when you score six. They score six runs.
And listen, Kapler would have been asked tougher questions to Girardi, but Girardi brings a smile, right? They go, Joe, this is Jay so-and-so. Oh, hi, Jay. He gives you one of those right away and disarms you.
Yeah, he's a nice
fella. Tough question. You go, he called me Jay. I'm out.
Yes.
All right. Now, let's go quickly to the Sixers. Look great. Defensively, they look great. Ben Simmons, a monster game yesterday. Horford, a really good game. I've got absolutely no complaints about the Sixers right now. Now, they let the game get away. Who cares if they won or lost? But they just crushed the Grizzlies defensively in that game.
They did. They smothered them.
Yeah, so, he's experimenting with this rotation. So, like, Alex Burks had some moments where he fired a little bit.
Yeah.
Robinson is set back again.
He got hurt.
Furkan played a lot of minutes, so he's in there. Thibel's in there. Scott had a couple moments. He's still, they're still trying to figure out who that nine is going to be.
Yeah, I know he wants Korkmaz. From what I'm seeing, when they start D'ing that guy up, yes, it's going to be Burks.
Yeah, and he got destroyed defensively last night at the end of that game.
Yeah, he really needs Embiid in the game to protect him when his man beats him. And obviously, he's not playing. He wasn't playing. So once they went past Korkmaz, it was just right down the lane.
But hey, things are looking up right now for the Sixers. The Phillies lose 2 of 3 to this rotten-ass team affected by the COVID-19. It's mind-boggling to me. And I know it's only 3 games, and I don't want to sound the alarm. But listen, it's a 60-game season. Every move or non-move, every at-bat that you go 0-for with runners in scoring position, it matters. It's tenfold now in a 60-game season. All right, we're off and running. Here's how you get in. 610-632-0975. We're talking about baseball like it's going to continue. I have no idea what's going to happen with this situation. We're going to have Matt Breen on at 3 o'clock to get the latest on the test and what's going to happen with the Phillies and the Marlins and all this kind of stuff. It's the Mike Missinelli Show. We are back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Citadel's free checking account. Open online at citadelbanking.com/made easy. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, this is Anthony Gargano. Listen up, love doesn't stop. And neither does Golden Nugget Jewelers. My friends at Golden Nugget Jewelers have officially opened their doors again. Largest selection of diamonds, clean and safe environment, major financing options, as well as unbeatable prices for name brands such as Verragio and Tacori. So you can find the perfect diamond without breaking the bank. It's time to show your partner how much you love them. Visit the Golden Nugget Jewelers store at the corner of 8th and Chestnut, or call them 215-925-2777 today.
WPEN, Burlington, Philadelphia, a Beasley Media Group station. Home of 76ers basketball.
Look out below, Joel Embiid.
Flyers hockey.
He scores!
And Mike Missinelli, afternoons from 2 to 6.
Go maker.
Plug in. 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
All right, it's 3 o'clock hour of the Mike Missinelli Show, brought to us by Corvallis Bakery and Deli. More famous tomato pie, hoagie, party trays, every bit is good. All right, so the Phils dropped 2 of 3 to the Marlins, but the bigger story is what happens from here. The Phillies have undergone tests. We're waiting for results of the tests. The Marlins have 14 people now that have tested positive, so they've had to alter, Major League Baseball has had to alter their plans, and now they're going to play their games, and they're not going to go back to Florida. They're going to play them from, they're going to go from here to Baltimore when they are cleared, when their tests come through for the rest of the team. So to find out everything about this whole thing, let's bring in the man who covers the Phillies to cover this weekend series, sir, the Inquirer, Matt Breen on the Comcast Business Hotline. Matt, what's the latest? You know, what do they do from here? What do you expect to have had to happen here?
So the Phillies, like you said, they're getting tested today at the ballpark. They're obviously not going to play tonight against the Yankees, and they have a game tomorrow night against the Yankees, and right now that's uncertain too. I wouldn't be surprised if that game gets postponed or if that game gets moved to New York, but I say postponed because you might not have results in time for that game that you play tomorrow. The results that are being done today might not be back by first pitch tomorrow, so it's not as easy as just saying we can't just play in Philly, because you don't know how many Phillies, if any, you know, got infected by playing a team that was obviously so widespread infected by COVID.
So the Yankees are in town, and they're quarantined, or I know that they had to sanitize the clubhouse, and the Yankees are bringing in their own clubhouse people, but are the Yankees allowed to work out at the ballpark?
I would say the Yankees are definitely not at Citizens Bank Park
today.
And as far as what they're doing is, I would, you know, point to the, what the protocols are when teams are on the road, which really is to pretty much be confined to your hotel. So I'm sure they're almost exclusively confined to where they're staying downtown.
Matt, let's get to the dynamics of playing that game yesterday. And the word that we hear is that the Marlins players voted to play, when I would have thought that Major League Baseball would have had to step in and not play that game yesterday. What are your thoughts?
I was shocked that the game was played. I was, you know, in the press box. Just, it's a, you know, a lazy Sunday. And next thing you know, you hear rumblings that the Marlins starting pitcher is getting scratched. Then he gets scratched with no reason given, which in this year, when there's no reason given for injuries, when there's always a reason given in the past, put your antennas up that something's, you know, COVID related. Then it comes out on Twitter that he did test positive. So I said to the, you know, the guys I'm sitting with, I said, you know, if the starting pitcher is tested positive for coronavirus, he was in the clubhouse, he was in the hotel, he was on the team flight, he was on the bus, he was in the dugout, et cetera, et cetera. He clearly came in contact with other people. So under protocols, which, you know, Phillies fans are very familiar with, following what happened to Aaron Nola and Adam Peasley and guys in spring training that were kept away for various coronavirus reasons without ever testing positive, then the entire Marlins team should have been quarantined yesterday. But they weren't. Instead, they voted. They had a group text among the players in the morning. They found out three players tested positive. The Marlins players texted about it. They said, we want to play. The Marlins said they wanted to play. Both opinions went to MLB, and the game went on. And I think, you know, everybody wants to play. Of course, the players want to play. The Marlins want to play. But MLB, really, they have a 103-page manual that was put out, and that was a big deal. That this is, we care about safety and all that, and it's all detailed. Then, you know, you got to use that manual, and you got to step in and say, there's no game today. And I believe that if you postponed yesterday's game, took care of everything, got everybody tested, you're probably playing tonight. But yeah. But instead, you weren't prudent. You went through with it, and now there's no game tonight for both teams, and tomorrow's in question as well.
So my question is, if Major League Baseball knows about this, why didn't they act? Like, isn't it their responsibility to just shut that game down?
That's a million-dollar question. Rob Manfred hasn't spoken yet today, and if he does, hopefully he would be able to give a better answer. But I don't know, and I think it's just, you know, now I'm sure they would say, we wish we shut it down, but in the moment, they think they can, you know, go through with it. And I guess people forget how strong this virus is. We've been living with it for 6 or 7 months now. You know, you kind of know enough about it that how quick it can spread through. And look what it did to that clubhouse. And the Phillies are getting tested today, roughly, you know, 100 people. It's not just the team. It's clubhouse personnel, the, you know, security, the bus drivers, the everybody that's pretty much comes in contact with the team. And I would be shocked if it comes up zero positive test.
Well, let's talk from the Phillies' viewpoint. Do the Phillies know what's going on over there? Are they aware of this situation?
They were aware yesterday that there was some type of outbreak on the other side of the club, the other side of the ballpark. They decided to play. They sent a text message to the team yesterday to tell them to take precautions. That's why if anybody watched the game, they saw Bryce Harper wearing a face mask when he ran the bases. He did that because he wasn't sure what Marlins players were either positive or still awaiting test results when he was on the bases. Maurice Hoskins wore a face mask when he was playing first base. So they decided to play as well. And, you know, I guess I don't know if they had full information of how widespread the outbreak was, but it's not like there's, you know, both parties mutually went into this game knowing that there was some type of
that's the silly part of it from both viewpoints. Now I can see the Marlins being motivated to play because they think they can get off to a good start and steal a playoff spot, the whole bit, and they own the Phillies. The Phillies should, like, I'm curious to know why they didn't. No. This guy's testing positive over there. We can't play this game.
Yeah, I think it comes down to when you allow players and managers and coaches to make decisions. You know, you've been around sports a long time. You can, they're going to want to play. This is where you need.
Yeah, you got to protect people from themselves sometimes.
Exactly. You need the joint committee of Major League Baseball and the players union to step in Sunday morning and say, guys, we appreciate that you want to play today, but you can't. Come back tomorrow.
Let me ask you, you have no way of knowing this, neither do we, but I have to ask you what your feeling is on whether they can pull this off, because I don't think this is going to stop here. I think you're going to see similar reports from other teams and quarantines and whatever they're going to do to these, like who finishes the season before they go, nah, it's not worth it.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. I think we always knew it was going to be a challenge, but yesterday and what happened today found out that, you know, it was a reminder of how big of a challenge it's going to be. And what's the challenge? Is it a challenge to finish the game, to get through the season healthy? Or is there's another challenge of even being able to play a full 60-game season? Like, the Phillies might get to September 27th, but they missed out today. They might miss out tomorrow. When do you make up those games? Maybe they get a rainout game that they miss out on. So then at the end of the season, you played 52 games or 54 games. So, you know, how does that work out? I just think there's so many degrees to pulling this off. It's going to be incredibly difficult. And yesterday and today was not a good day to feel optimistic that they can do it.
All right, last question on this, and then I want to get to actual team questions. Is it possible that Major League Baseball looks at this and goes, okay, let's look at this logically with our scientific experts? The people who came from the hotbed of COVID-19 arrived in Philadelphia, infected themselves, infected the Phillies. We find out the tests are positive. Major League Baseball goes, okay, these two teams are out.
It could. If you look at what the MLS did, teams that had widespread positive tests were taken out of the MLS tournament in Orlando. I know the MLS is a different animal than Major League Baseball, but there is some type of precedent on pro sports. And the last thing I want to say about this is that, you bring this, like, traveling circus to cities, and now look what's going on in Philadelphia as a whole. The community, you know, has to deal with a group of 45 to 50 people that are stuck in your city, that almost half of them have, or, you know, roughly half have tested positive for coronavirus. And now, you know, that's thrown on to Philadelphia. It's just that's why this is such a mess, is that you're bringing these teams to different communities and different towns. And then it's the city's responsibility to deal with it. It's the hotel workers. It's the bus drivers. It's the people that live in those towns are now dealing with, you know, a group of infected COVID-19 individuals. It's just, it's so complicated.
Yeah. All right. We're talking to Matt Breen, covers the Phillies for the Inquirer. Matt, in the first three games, there has been a constant, and the constant is that their bullpen is not very good. But there's also, I saw some questionable moves, and we were talking a little earlier that had this been Gabe Kapler in the manager's seat, he would be excoriated today. And Joe's a nice guy, and everybody loves Joe, and he's got a better pedigree and all that. But Ramon Rosso in game one, Cole Irvin and Velasquez after three, they take him out after a 1-2-3 inning and bring Cole Irvin in there. I saw some manager moves that were very questionable.
Yeah, I thought Ramon Rosso on Friday night, it's opening day, first high leverage spot of the season. And then you know, you have a fresh bullpen, 11 guys out there, the biggest bullpen really in Phillies history to start a season. And you start with a guy who has almost zero experience coming out of the bullpen and making his major league debut with a runner on base. It was a tough spot. And I know Ramon Rosso has a powerful arm, so there's reasons to like that move, but I thought that was, to me, on opening day, you know, you're trying that you should start from the top. Go with, you know, a Tommy Hunter. I know people are going to rip that, but you know, your experienced arms. Tommy Hunter could have worked there. Nick Pivetta could have worked there. You know, there's other moves that could have been, other pitchers that could have dealt that spot besides Rosso. And then yesterday is just, I don't want to, I mean, really, I think the game was lost, not because of Joe Girardi. It was, or the way he managed the bullpen. Really, it was just, you spot a guy a 4-run lead, and an inning later, it's coughed right back up. That was the main problem.
Yes, and then, so that's the reason to dislike Velasquez. I get it. But why not trust him? Knowing your bullpen is not good, why not trust him after a 1-2-3 inning to try to eat some innings to lessen the load on that pen? And the guy you bring in is not a successful pitcher.
Yeah, but his pitch count was high. It's his first start of the season. And, you know, we had talked last week how these guys were not going to be pitching deep in the games or early in the season.
Was ideally, it 53 pitches?
And a long 53. I don't know how much Vince Velasquez.
I get it, but look what we're doing. We're saying the alternative is better, is it?
No, it's probably equal, honestly. But the real problem is not the bullpen usage, it's the bullpen construction.
Yeah.
You know, when I was doing a roster, we were trying to predict the roster last week for the paper. And I know there's going to be 11 arms in the bullpen. And I'm looking at the roster, and I said, I cannot find 11 arms for this bullpen. That's how thin they were. And now you're seeing that. It took the opening game, the fifth inning of the first game, you found out how thin that bullpen was. And that's the theme of the weekend. You knew that was going to be a problem. The problems of the team were the back of the rotation and the bullpen. And there you saw it in the first
game. Yeah, and that's obviously on the general manager's office. So I get that part of it. All right, Matt, with any information, let us know if there's anything that you're hearing. And we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate it.
There's Matt Breen covering the Phillies for the Inquirer. You see, this pitch count crap. Well, yeah. You got to eat innings with the dude. Yeah, I got no faith in him either. Got a clean third inning. And you, like, the Cole Irvin cannot be on my mound. So if you're going to tell me that's a better alternative than sending this guy out to try to squeeze six more freaking outs out of the guy, then I put on a balancing scale and I go, I hate Velasquez, but I'll take that possibility over Cole Irvin coming in to hold it.
Yeah, and maybe, let's say you're going to max him out at 70. Let's just say, because but at 53, I can leave.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
And right now, let's talk Sixer basketball with the man who is zeroed in on the Sixers in the bubble, and so far so good in the bubble for all these NBA teams, and especially the Sixers, which look really good defensively. Let's welcome in Rich Hoffman from The Athletic. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline. All right, what have you seen so far with this squad?
I think I've seen some signs to be cautiously optimistic, to steal a phrase from Brett Brown. I think, you know, first off, Ben Simmons, like, they weren't lying that he looks back to 100% health. I think, we'll see with Joel Embiid. It doesn't seem like that's a major deal. Brett Brown said yesterday he wasn't concerned, and he was back at a light practice today. But overall, it seems like, yeah, the team is overall, like, pretty healthy. I think Al Horford is moving better than we saw, you know, like a few months ago, or actually many months ago now. I have to remember that we were paused for 4 months. But, in the starting lineup, the new move to put Shake Milton, he looks like he is, he's not fazed by the new responsibility. And then you have Ben Simmons shooting threes. So I think for the most part, they have to be pretty encouraged from what are, you know, meaningless exhibition games, but still.
Yeah, they are meaningless exhibition. The first one, I can almost discount, is Memphis look lost, and they have a lot of work to do. But OKC, legit, and the Sixers employed really good defense against both of those teams. So that's the one constant that they're going to rely on. And now, what differences did you see with Ben not being the one?
Well, I think for the most part, Mike, they're running the same offense that they've preferred in Brett Brown's time. The only difference is now that Simmons is the four, which basically means that instead of being outside of the three-point line, his first touch is catching it at the elbow. And I do think, like, just watching them run pretty much the same, and Brett calls them concept, over and over again, he's not going to touch the ball, much less. Like, the first pass is always to him at the elbow. And I think, like, that is, you know, that might not seem like a huge deal, but if he does catch it there, like, you have to guard him at the elbow. If you don't guard him, like, he will just, like, take one dribble and score. Mm-hmm. So that's a big part of it. I think it's a nice blend of his and Milton's skill set, because, like, you know, when people say, like, oh, Shake Milton is the point guard, he's not the same point guard in the sense that, like, Chris Paul, who's had a Hall of Fame career, like, he's going to run 30 pick and rolls a game. That's not what you want Shake Milton to do. You want him to pass and move off the ball and then sometimes run a pick and roll. So I think, you know, we didn't get to see Embiid yesterday. I guess my main question is that the main things I would take away is I like the spacing. I like how Milton and Simmons have looked. I'm a little curious on how they bring Embiid into the fold with this post game, if they are throwing the ball to Simmons at the elbow. But I think for the most part, like, you've seen, what did Simmons have, like, 9 assists in both games?
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to have the ball much less than what he was previously accustomed to. It just might be in a different spot.
Okay. So you're cautiously optimistic, but I noticed you said cautiously. Took you stretched that word out for a little bit.
It's the Sixers, Mike. You have to be cautiously optimistic.
All right. So you are impressed, but you don't want to go forward and say, oh, my God, look at this squad.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's like with Simmons' three-pointer the other day. Or two three-pointers. I mean, that's...
Yeah, two. He made the second one. I lost the bet sandwich.
Yeah. Oh, did you?
Yeah. To Tyrone. I bet him he would. After he missed the first one, I said, we won't see that no more. And then he cranks one up.
I'd like to see him miss 5 in a game. You know,
I would like to see that too, because it'll open up a lot of other things. I know that's unrealistic. I haven't seen him taking the mid-range yet. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be important when Embiid comes back and when he's spacing off the ball. But I think I like what I've seen from him. It's clearly some level of a mental block where he just needs to stand outside the 3-point line. But, you know, I think yesterday was a little bit different. He got to play the style that he's, like, thrived with without Embiid. You know, I'm thinking back to the Lakers game at home this season when he was the best player on the floor when LeBron James and Anthony Davis were playing against him that night.
Yeah.
And, but I have liked kind of what I've seen and how they are spacing better. That's important. But yeah, I guess my point is it's just the scrimmage right now.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Let's look at the rotation, because I'm interested in the bench rotation. And I think we can pretty much see that, obviously Horford's locked, but Furkan and Thybulle look to be locks also, which means the 9th spot, and he tested Glenn Robinson the 3rd first, and then Burks stepped up a little bit lately, and he's using Scott. Is that the way you say it? Horford, Furkan, Thybulle, locks to come off the bench as a rotation. Who's the next guy, you think?
I think it would be Robinson. I think the way you described it is exactly right. I think they just really, they need Korkmaz to shoot, and he just has that skill set. I thought it was pretty interesting in the first game. They tried Embiid and Horford together. There was a little bit of a question of when that would happen, just with Brown's comments about how they really didn't practice with that group, but at some point you have to play them together. And I thought it was really interesting, like, who they played with those three guys. They played Milton, Korkmaz, and Thybulle. And those are, you know, that makes sense to me. That's like, that's in Milton and Korkmaz, that's your two best volume 3-point shooters, which you just need with those two big guys. And then Thybulle, who, you know, is a streaky 3-point shooter. But I think when you look at Korkmaz and Milton, you think, like, all right, we're going to need some level of defense on the perimeter. And that makes sense. I do think that Robinson, and Brett said this yesterday, that, you know, after he suffered a hit pointer and a pretty nasty collision with Terrence Ferguson, that he thought he had been playing really well. And in the game yesterday, when Embiid wasn't available, you kind of saw his positional versatility, because he was playing the 4, which is something that, like, Mike Scott used to play that position for the most part. So I think Robinson is somebody who, if he's as long as he's not too banged up here, you could see him play both the 3 and the 4. And then, yeah, Burks is the final guy. And it seems like, you know, even though he's the 10th guy, he should feel pretty happy. It seems like he's getting the ball a lot when he is in the game, and they're running those pick and rolls with Ben Simmons. So that would be your 10-man rotation at this point, I would say.
10, but they got to reduce that, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I'm looking at the long haul and how they're going to reduce it and who survives as maybe the ninth man.
It's tough, because I think, like, Burks and Robinson, they're not perfect players. Like, there's a reason that both of them were available for what was, three middling second-round picks. But they both provide, like, an element where if they are playing well, I could see them affect the playoff game. I guess it would kind of come down to if you're in a playoff series and you are just completely starved for somebody to create a shot, I think Burks would get the nod. But overall, I think to start, they like Robinson's versatility, and he's played well. So I would say he's probably the ninth guy right now.
All right, let's look at the bubble itself. Seems to be working out okay. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's, I think...
Except for here and there, getting a delivery of wings here and there.
Well, I've heard that their wings are like the best.
Yeah, I know. I see. It's worth a trip to Atlanta to grab the wings, apparently.
Yeah, and I think they made the right call in giving him the 10-day quarantine. Mm-hmm. Although I'm a pretty big fan of Lou Williams. I remember the story when he was in Philly where he convinced the guy who was sticking him up to just go eat McDonald's with him. So,
remember that story? Yeah.
not his best move, though, there.
Yeah,
I think for the most part, they have these strict, protocols, and they seem to be working. Like, I thought the first week was going to be the scary version because, do they have six or seven people in the bubble that just when they flew, they didn't have them test positive, at that time? As we know, it can take a couple of days for that to happen, and they didn't have it happen. So I think, for now, I'm definitely more optimistic. I was already pretty optimistic that they were going to get it done, but I can't point to anything that I've seen that says they're not going to be able to get this done. I guess maybe part of it is I'm looking at these other sports that are just trying to play.
Man, it's survival. It's amazing. All right, Rich, listen, good stuff. We appreciate it. Hang in there with this whole thing, and we're coming to a pretty interesting chapter for the 76ers.
Yeah, important decisions to be made amid all these weird circumstances. Thanks, Mike.
All right, man. It's Rich Hoffman checking in.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.